Chapter 24. Settling in Battle Creek. Printed in the Review and Herald, August 22, 1935. The company that moved from Rochester to Battle Creek about the 1st of November 1855 numbered 14. Of this number, just one half made up the family of James White. Besides himself and his wife, there were the three little boys, Henry, Edson, and Willie, 8, 6, and 1 year old respectively, and their faithful friends and helpers, Clarissa Bonvoy and Jenny Frazier. The large family that had resided in one house at Rochester was now broken up into several groups. James White rented a cottage on the south side of Van Buren Street, nearly opposite the home of David Hewitt, and there they lived for about a year. Stephen and Sarah Belden set up housekeeping for themselves. Warren Batchelor, with his mother and sister, found a place together, and the two single men, Uriah Smith and George Amidon, boarded with a resident family. The hand press, type, and such office equipment as was worth moving, as well as the unsold stock of books, pamphlets, and tracts, were shipped from Rochester by freight, and when they arrived, were taken into the newly erected office. It will be remembered that at the conference held September 23, at which time it was decided to move the Advent Review to Battle Creek, there was chosen a financial committee of three, whose duty it was to move the office and publish the Advent Review. This committee, composed of Daniel Palmer of Jackson and Henry Lyon and Serenius Smith of Battle Creek, took their responsibilities seriously. The only public call they made for means was for a few hundred dollars with which to move the goods from Rochester and to buy some new equipment and also to repay James White for money he had borrowed and invested in the printing enterprise while in Rochester. To provide a home in Battle Creek for the review office, each member of the committee contributed $300, and they were joined by J.P. Kellogg, who shared equally with them in the sacrifice. With the $1,200 thus raised, two lots were purchased on the southeast corner of Washington and Main Streets, and an office building was quickly erected. The structure was 20 by 30 feet and two stories high. In a news note of gratitude, James White referred to the removal of the office to Battle Creek as follows in the first number of the Review, issued in its new home. We are happy to state to the friends of the Review that the office building erected by four brethren in this state is completed, and that the press, type, etc., had a safe and prosperous removal from Rochester, New York, to its new location. The office building is commodious and occupies a retired, pleasant, and healthy situation. All connected with the office enter upon their work with fresh courage and pleasing hopes of witnessing the prosperity of the Review and the spread of truth and holiness in the land. James White, now freed from the cares and responsibilities of ownership, was asked to act as manager of the growing enterprise. Uriah Smith, whose approved ability as a writer and author was generally recognized, was chosen resident editor, which responsibility he carried for many years. Stephen Belden continued to act as superintendent and foreman of the type room. George Amidon and Warren Batchelor set type and did the press work. And now, for the first time, the workers were granted a stated salary. Before this, they had worked for room and board, a small allowance for clothing, and such other expenses as were deemed absolutely necessary. But so eager were they that the printing office should pay its way that they cheerfully accepted only $5 a week for their services. In the same spirit, and to help make the newly established enterprise a success, James White at first accepted only $4 a week. Later he drew $6, and when the success of the work was assured, $7 a week. With the financial responsibility of the paper in the hands of the publishing committee, Henry Lyon, Serenius Smith, and Daniel Palmer, the work began well. The paper was changed from a biweekly to a weekly, and the subscription price was fixed at $1 for a volume of 26 numbers, $2 a year, with special concessions to the ministers and the poor. The paid subscription list, which stood close to 2,500 at the time of the move, grew rapidly, and the enterprise in its new location was assured of success. The 10 families comprising the church of 24 members in Battle Creek gave a hearty welcome to the company from Rochester. So interwoven with the spirit of the early days is the history of this little company that it is fitting to make brief reference to some of the incidents connected with its earliest days. It was in the late summer of 1852 that Joseph Bates had brought the third angel's message to Battle Creek. In the review of July 8, 1852, Elder Bates stated that he expected to spend the time between July 1 and 16 laboring between Detroit, Michigan, and Michigan City, Indiana. In fulfillment of this plan, he held meetings in many places, among them Sylvan Center, now Chelsea, about 12 miles east of Jackson. After this, while ministering to the church in Jackson and contemplating a visit to some Adventists in Indiana, he had an impressive dream that led him to go to Battle Creek. He dreamed that he was on a ship sailing west, and that he was told to get off at Battle Creek. In the morning, he inquired of the brethren if there was a place by that name lying to the west of them. They said, "Yes, it is about 40 miles up the railroad." He then asked, "Are there any Adventists there?" They replied, "We do not know of one." He said, "I must go there, for in my dream I was told I must work there." J.N. Loughborough, to whom we are indebted for this incident, related to him by the sturdy pioneer himself, tells us that Elder Bates boarded the early morning westbound train, and while traveling, meditated and prayed as to the course he should follow on his arrival in Battle Creek. Very distinctly, he was impressed that if he could place his message before honest hearers, it would be readily received. It occurred to him that from the postmaster he might receive helpful information. Hurrying to the post office, he found the postmaster waiting for the arrival of the mail from the early train, and he asked him for the name and address of the most honest man in Battle Creek. Without hesitation, the postmaster gave his answer, stating that a peddler, David Hewitt by name, an earnest Christian, was considered the most honest man in those parts. Elder Bates was directed to his house, the only one on the right side of Van Buren Street between Washington Avenue and Cass Street, and just opposite a log cabin. Mr. Hewitt responded to Elder Bates' firm knock, and the visitor, after introducing himself, said, "I have been referred to you as the most honest man in all these parts. I have some important truths which I wish to tell you." "Come in," Brother Hewitt cordially replied. "We are just sitting down to breakfast. You partake with us, and we will then listen to you." The entire day, we are told, was devoted to a study of the Advent movement, the third angel's message, and the Sabbath, and without hesitation, this most honest man accepted the message and resolved to observe the seventh day Sabbath. A month later, at a meeting at Jackson held August 13 to 15, David Hewitt, together with J.P. Kellogg and B.B. Brigham, was baptized by the veteran worker who had brought to them the truths of the message of the third angel. It was not long until others in Battle Creek joined the Hewitts, and for about 3 years, Sabbath meetings were held in the front room of the Hewitt home. With the work once started in Battle Creek, several Sabbath-keeping families soon moved in and swelled the little company. Providentially, Joseph B. Frisbee and his wife moved to Battle Creek from Chelsea, Michigan, in the autumn of 1853, and though newly come to the faith, as a minister of some experience, he was by his tactful ministry able to strengthen the little company. A sketch of the events which made Battle Creek the choice for the home of the publishing work would be very incomplete without referring to Elder Frisbee's experience. In so doing, we will again go back to Joseph Bates' Michigan trip of 1852. As a result of the meetings held by Elder Bates in Sylvan Center in the summer of 1852, just before his visit to Battle Creek, Joseph Frisbee, his wife and her sister Susan, and Charles and Lauren Glover were convinced of the truths presented. Elder Frisbee was at that time a preacher in the Methodist Protestant Church. He was 36 years of age and had been 6 years in the ministry. When Elder Bates came with the third angel's message into this prosperous farming district lying between Jackson and Ann Arbor, Elder Frisbee's bishop called upon him to meet the startling heresy and drive its advocate out of the country. Elder Frisbee felt that to meet Elder Bates, he must make thorough preparation. As a result of prayerful study of the Bible, he became convinced that Elder Bates was right, and that he and the bishop were wrong. Then he became friendly with Elder Bates and asked him into the pulpit with him and gave him opportunity to present the Bible view of the Sabbath. He heartily accepted the teaching of the soon coming of Christ and the doctrine of life only in Christ. These doctrines he could hold and teach and still continue to minister to his congregation. But to keep and teach the seventh-day Sabbath was different, and for some time he hesitated. The prospect of unemployment on the one hand, and on the other hand the promise of the pastorate of a city church if he would advocate Sunday observance, led him to move slowly. Not until March 1 of 1853 did he fully take his stand on the observance of the Sabbath of Jehovah. 3 months later, he attended the meeting of June 3 to 5, 1853, in Jackson, at which James and Ellen White were present. In a vision given to Mrs. White at this time, she saw Elder Frisbee and was bidden to encourage him to go speedily with the message. In one of his diaries, we find a statement quoted from Mrs. White as follows. "I saw Brother Frisbee, that God had arrested a soul by the light of power and of truth, and that through him he would get glory to himself. I saw that he could effect more than some others, because he was formerly opposed, and God would glorify himself through him, and he would be a fit vessel for the Master's use if he would live humbly and realize his dependence upon God. The messengers must all move out unitedly with decision and mercy in love." Elder White, in reporting this Jackson meeting, and the meeting held 2 weeks later in Charles Glover's big barn at Sylvan Center, wrote feelingly of their experiences as follows. "Brother J.B. Frisbee seemed to have the armor on at this meeting. He spoke freely of his former prejudices and opposition to the Sabbath and Sabbath keepers, the change that had taken place in his feelings and views, and that he was now with us in sentiment and in sympathy. We first saw this dear brother at the Jackson Conference, and when introduced to him, who had so strongly opposed us through the Harbinger, but now was greatly humbled under a sense of his past wrongs that he had opposed the truth and people of God, our feelings could not be easily described. We wept aloud. We both wept, and there mingled our tears of gratitude and joy. The acquaintance formed with Brother Frisbee was indeed happy. We trust that by the help of God, he will prove a blessing to the cause in the West." From this time forward, Elder Frisbee took a lively interest in everything that related to the progress of the Seventh-day Adventist cause. he was one of the first to urge that the publishing work be moved to Michigan. In response to an invitation from Elder White, he attended the conference in Rochester, July 14 through 17, and acted on an important committee there. After returning home from the Rochester conference, he spent the greater part of August and September in carrying the message into new fields, north and west. When embarrassed for lack of funds, he returned to Chelsea and endeavored by manual labor to accumulate means for the support of his family and for further labors in the field. He also sought to win relatives and neighbors to Sabbath observance, but his efforts in religious work were met with indifference, ridicule, and scorn. Then he decided to look for a more favorable place to live and labor. He said to his wife, "Let us take our horse and carriage and visit the places where I have preached and ask the Lord to guide us regarding our future location." In harmony with this resolution, they drove from place to place, to Grass Lake, to Jackson, to Marshall, and Ceresco. But in none of these places did he feel a desire to stay. However, on reaching Battle Creek, he said to his wife, "Mother, I feel impressed that this is the place where the Lord wants us to stay." Then, going to the post office, as Elder Bates had done a year before, he asked Mr. Noble, the postmaster, if he knew of anyone in town who observed the seventh day of the week as the Sabbath. The postmaster replied that there was a man in the West End named Hewitt who was keeping Saturday for Sunday. Following the directions given, Elder Frisbee soon found David Hewitt and was told that there were a few others in Battle Creek keeping the Sabbath. After relating to Brother Hewitt his conviction that he should locate in this place, he asked his assistance in finding a place to live. Elder Frisbee was told that there was not a house for rent in that part of town, but that two good lots nearby on the corner of Cass and Van Buren Streets could be secured for $25 each. Quickly, the lots were purchased, and without delay, a 1 1/2-story house was built on the corner. One of his diary entries says, "Built a house 16x24, boarded up and down, in which to place my wife and girls, then forsook all and started out by faith to proclaim the message." The presence of the Frisbee family at Battle Creek proved to be a great help to the little band living there. Although he spent the most of his time carrying the message to towns and country places where it had never been heard, yet his residence in Battle Creek and his practical leadership of the church gave courage to the brethren and balance to the work. Soon, other brethren of sterling character moved in from other places: Jonah Lewis and his wife with 4 children from Comstock, Henry and Deborah Lyon from Plymouth, Abram and Caroline Dodge and Serenius Smith and family from Jackson. During the year 1855, 3 meeting houses were built by companies of Sabbath-keeping believers, one in Battle Creek, one in Bucksbridge, New York, and one in Wisconsin. The one in Battle Creek seems to have been the first of these 3, for as early as March 5, Elder Frisbee, in giving a report of his labors and of the cause in Battle Creek, wrote, "The brethren have thought best, inasmuch as the cause is now prospering here and all around us, to build a cheap but convenient meeting house for Sabbath worship and conferences, also that we may have a place for preaching. We have the timber here, and part of the lumber, and will put it up as soon as it shall be warm enough. We have been troubled for a house to hold a congregation. This humble building, 18x24 feet, in which the important council of November 16 was held, is described by Mrs. Evelyn Lewis Revis, who attended meetings there, in the following words. It was a small wooden building. The seats were plain wooden benches with straight backs, occupying the center of the room with aisles at the sides. The floor was made of wide, unpainted boards, placed lengthwise of the building. The outside was simply boarded up and down with a batten finish. And in this building, Sabbath services were held when the company of workers from Rochester joined the 24 members of the Battle Creek Church. Here, before the beginning of the new year, a Sabbath school was organized with Merritt G. Kellogg as the first superintendent. And so was the way prepared for the building up of a strong center for the rapidly growing work. In the years that followed, the brethren could see that it was a kind providence that had led them to a place with pleasant surroundings, kindly neighbors, and where plots of ground of convenient size for houses and gardens could be purchased at moderate prices. In Jackson were the state prison and manufacturing enterprises. Kalamazoo had the hospital for the insane. Marshall was the county seat. Other towns in this part of Michigan had their colleges or other institutions, and real estate in any of these places could not be so readily purchased at prices within the reach of the humble workers from Rochester. In Battle Creek they were welcomed, and here in the days to come, the church flourished and grew.